Oh, wow. It's time for Dear Science, thanks to MOTAT, Auckland's Museum of Transport and Technology.
Yeah, thanks, MOTAT.
Yeah.
How are you, Alan?
Cold.
It's cold, is it?
It's cold.
Oh, you're just meaning generally not in the studio.
No. Shit, it's warm in the studio.
Okay.
Go outside. I was wrong to wear shorts today. I think autumn's here, folks.
It is much chillier than it has been.
Yes.
Just to say, we don't have Sherry in studio at the moment, but she'll be joining us shortly, I'm sure.
Okay.
But first up, what are we talking about?
Pain.
Gene mutation. Yeah, or pain or not pain.
Yeah, yeah.
No pain.
Yeah.
So what's this?
Well, I've always wondered about pain. You know, the old saying, a little bit of pain never hurt anyone, you know, but that's not really true, is it?
And literally not true, no.
Literally not true. But I don't get where evolution thought pain would be a good idea.
I do.
Yeah.
Come on, Alan.
Yeah, but I mean, it's a whole degree thing, though. I mean, why the hell does, you know, a broken arm or something have to hurt so damn much?
I see what you mean.
I can understand a little bit, but, you know, really.
When you go to evolution, though, the whole point of pain, isn't it, is it that it's our brain saying, this hurts, don't do it more.
Yeah. Well, this hurts a little bit, don't do it more would be good, you know.
Right, okay. But, I mean, if you want to get into that, I personally have a bone to pick.
Here we go.
You know, do we have to have our periods for, like, a whole week? Can't we just be like, oh,
yeah,
you're not pregnant on one day, and then we move on, you know? I don't know.
Indeed. No, but.
Everyone's got a different relationship to the period, and everybody seems has a different relationship to pain.
Pain, yeah. And this is the basis of this story. There's a lady by the name of Jo Cameron in Scotland, and she's kind of made medical history because she seems to be pretty much impervious to pain, and they've only just found this out, and she's about 71 years old now.
Whoa. That's a long time to have no pain.
Well, indeed. And she's lived her entire life basically just thinking that she was normal and
had a really high pain tolerance.
Yeah.
Whoa.
And so she had to go into hospital to have her hip done. And ordinarily, that's a really, really painful procedure. And she didn't ask for any painkillers or anything after the operation. And she also needed an operation on her hand as well. And ditto. And the doctors were kind of stunned about this. And so they sent her off to some geneticists at Oxford and University College London, and they came back and found that she had a gene mutation that essentially made her almost impervious to pain.
So she does feel it, but
a little bit, apparently. But then again, it's kind of hard to, I guess, talk about how much pain you're feeling if you don't know.
That's right. That's the extent to which. Okay, but isn't that dangerous, though, if you are, for example, you know, you've burnt yourself.
Indeed,
and you don't
yes.
actually know, and then.
And that's what she was saying, that she would often sort of cut herself or burn herself, and she didn't even, you know, realise that had happened.
Yeah.
And, but, I mean, the big plus out of all of this is that scientists now have got some better idea of how pain works.
Okay.
Genetically.
Yeah.
And so she had a mutation in a gene that has now been pretty much shown to be the gene that controls an enzyme that basically transmits pain.
Wow.
And I reckon that's so cool. So
is this not common, though? Aren't there those stories of people that have, you know, whether it be genetic, whether it be psychological, a sort of relationship to pain where they don't feel stuff?
Yeah. I guess, you know, if you're pumped up with adrenaline, you don't feel pain,
right.
So that's more a sort of a chemical-y thing. But this, you know, this is a genetic thing, and you know, she can apparently eat you know, the hottest chilies and stuff,
and not be a problem.
She feels a pleasant glow in her mouth or something, apparently.
That's lovely.
And with that also goes very, very low levels of anxiety and fear. So she's fearless, she's not anxious, she can eat hot chilies.
I mean, it does sound good, doesn't it?
And she's an optimist as
well.
So think at me.
Yeah.
You know, pain, okay, yeah, it's kind of necessary, but think of people who live with damn pain,
yeah,
you know.
This is true.
And I think this is going to be big for those people, you know. Now you're sort of getting the genetic basis of it. You know where to target.
Yeah.
And I think this is huge. I think it's a fantastic story.
Yeah. Okay, well, thank you for sharing with us, Ella. Next story, though, speeding through, because we've got
some
musical.
Yes. Yeah, well.
Delights in store for you all. Money in misconduct. Now, how do we become an instant millionaire?
Yeah, wow. Well, this is a sort of story that never sort of makes the mainstream news, and I kind of wonder why, because you do hear of people sort of committing fraud and stuff like that, and that, you know, that might be 300,000 or, you know, 1 million that they've embezzled from whatever. This story concerns a researcher at Duke University in the States. That's over in, is it North Carolina or Virginia? North Carolina, I think. And so it's a very, very old, well-established university, and they have just agreed to pay the government $112.5 million in fines.
Wow.
Because one of their staff members falsified research data. And yeah.
We've talked about this before, though.
We have.
And there are many cases where this happens. Is it always that much money?
No. This is huge.
Okay.
And the big difference here is that there was a whistleblower involved in this. So there was a lab tech who was working on the lung function of rodents and doing pretty nasty things with the rodents, but we won't go into that. And basically she knew what results her boss wanted, and so she started, writing up the results to satisfy the boss, so to get all of the expected results, et cetera, et cetera. And they published an awful lot of papers on this stuff over an 8-year period, and they also used these results as a basis for 60 grant applications during that time. And these grant applications, these are big money. These probably, maybe $500,000, $1 million a shot sort of thing.
That adds up.
We're talking big bucks here. Yeah. Now, the whistleblower also worked in the same lab, and he had suspicions about what she was doing, and sort of brought it to the attention of the higher-ups at Duke, who basically ignored him, really. Wow. And he ended up out of a job.
No way.
Yeah. And then...
just the corruption. It never ends.
And so then he sort of brought these concerns to the government, and they had a look, and then they refused to prosecute. So he brought the prosecution himself, apparently, in 2014. So he sued the university for knowingly using fake results in publications and grant applications. So as a result of this, they had to retract 17 papers, which is never good.
Mm-hmm.
And
well, it's good for the public because information.
Yes. And most importantly, now Duke has just settled out of court for $112.5 million, of which the whistleblower gets $38 million.
Oh, wow.
Bucks. Yeah.
Where does the rest of it go?
Government.
Okay.
So basically that's a figure that I guess they were sort of thinking of how much money they got in grants and everything, sort of ill-gottenly, for want of a better word. So yeah,
go whistleblowing, eh?
It's not good. So
what this tells me is that surely there'll be plenty of other experiments and research that aren't necessarily up to scratch. And what if we don't have the whistleblowers?
Yes, I know. So you see how much money you can get out of this. I think there'll be whistleblowers everywhere now.
Mm.
But boy, it's a vast amount of money. And, it's just shocking all around. And it should have been stopped at source, but apparently, it wasn't.
Mm.
She ended up being sacked from the university for embezzling money in 2013. And it's taken this long to sort it all out.
Right.
Ugh.
Okay. Let's just, before we go on our final story,
indeed,
a couple of people have texted in about the no pain.
Yeah.
Someone says, she's the only person in the UK that can tolerate Brexit. Maybe Theresa May has this too.
Ah, very good. Very good.
Also, someone saying there was a guy with no pain that used to swim around Waiheke and Speedos in the winter. Perhaps they know something about this.
Or maybe he just hit it well.
Okay, I'm going to play this because we've had a request from Alan.
Oh, not
just going to say that this is from Alan, everybody.
Yeah. Oh, jeez.
Let's see if it works.
Is it going to work? Oof.
We'll keep it up.
Yeah.
For a little bit.
Okay. Do we have to? When I say this is a when Lillian says this is a request from me, it's. Yeah.
It's related to the final story. Okay, let's just bring it down. We'll keep it. We'll keep it underneath. Hey.
Yeah. Okay.
So mosquitoes. How do we get rid of mosquitoes?
How do you get rid of them? You play Skrillex to them. And you,
For people that don't know, this is a song by Skrillex called "Scary Monsters." Scary Monsters and Nice Sprites.
Okay, so the story behind this is that researchers in Malaysia, the Cayman Islands, Japan, Indonesia, and Thailand decided it would be a really good idea to look at the effect of music on mosquitoes.
Cool.
Okay, we're using music in the loosest possible sense there, as you can hear underneath me, okay? No, I'm not old, damn it. It's just crap. Anyway.
Hey, no judgment here.
Sorry,
just
no
science.
Judgment. Yes,
just
indeed.
Science.
Just science. Yes. So these folk did a study, and what they found, and I quote from the paper, that adult mosquitoes entertained with music copulated far less than their counterparts kept in the environment where there was no music entertainment.
Okay. So this means they were distracted by other things?
By the music, okay. Seemingly. And also the female mosquitoes, which remember are the ones that bite, they were found to attack their hosts a lot later on in time. And less often than when they weren't being subjected to this. Yeah.
Subjected to this. So, okay, but are we speaking, like, if you were out, you know, having a barbecue outside, yep. And are you playing music at that time, is that...
You put Skrillex on.
Is that the thing that protects you, or is this something that you have to do throughout the entire day or something?
No, well, so it's later all to at do night with, they... as you might guess, sort of frequencies and stuff like that, okay. Apparently. And so mosquitoes seem to be susceptible to certain frequencies, and apparently they chose this particular piece because it's got a lot of low frequencies and a lot of high frequencies in there, and they just blast it out, and that seems to be a way of keeping the mosquitoes as well as human beings away, probably.
Interesting. As well as
See, I thought you'd catch that.
Alan, and you're so but tough.
This does follow on just briefly at the end. There was previous work, and I'm deadly serious here. So somebody studied beetles.
Oh.
And they found that when you played them Back in Black by Akka Dakka, the beetles didn't feed as much. So
really?
Reduced feeding by the female beetles. It would put me off my food as well. Akka Dakka.
Oh my gosh. Okay.
A brief thing when it comes to music. Anyway.
Lastly, on the whistleblowers, somebody's texting Andrew saying whistleblower money is a legislated percentage in the
US.
Yes,
it is. Yeah,
the bigger
you're absolutely
the fine,
right.
The bigger the money.
Yep. So okay. He got about 30% or something, or just over 30%, I think. So yeah.
So I'm just going to say it. Why didn't Edward Snowden get some money instead of getting kicked out of the country?
Because he's holed up in Russia, probably, and right. The money's no good there, yeah.
Okay, shall we leave it there, Alan?
We shall,
and we'll,
yes.
We'll speak to you in 2 weeks.
Okay.
Thanks for the song as well.
Mind blowing. That was Dear Science, thanks to MOTAT, Auckland's Museum of Transport and Technology.